At California Psychics, we know that sometimes you can wake up thinking,
ugh, I don't know if I'm in the right career. Ew. Or the right relationship.
But whatever your life dilemma, at California Psychics, we'll give you the guidance you need to feel certain about your life choices. And because we only connect you with the very best, we guarantee if your reading isn't life-changing, it's free. California Psychics. Call 1-800-PREDICT today and get 20 minutes for just $20.
Friends, welcome back to Pod Maverick After Dark. I am Kirk Henderson, joined as always by Josh Bow, whose camera seemed to have just fallen upon him.
We're good.
You are joining he and I here at 9:30 on Monday, July 21st. We're joining you, and it's an emergency podcast because D'Angelo Russell has himself in some hot water. And I'm not going to talk about that whatsoever because I'm a 41-year-old man, and my recommendation is to get married, stay married, and don't cheat. It just works out better. Just some thoughts on life, not having anything to do with anything.
Life lessons with Kirk Henderson.
That's right. Don't cheat. Women are scary. The last time we talked, I was in Las Vegas and kind of out of my mind after like 4.5 days of no sleep. And I really don't remember what we talked about. So we
talked more about that awesome Cooper game, and then we talked about just your time in Vegas, like who you were talking to, what was going on, you know, because that's kind of the fun part of Vegas is all the people that you run into when you're out there and talking about and getting opinions about things from people that aren't just the people we talk to every day. You know what I mean?
Though I will admit, I probably spent some more, like, one of the funny things is, like, you know, I've talked with the homie Kevin Gray for years, but, like, I don't think I've spent any time with him, and got to hang out with him and some of the DLLS guys, like Mark Stein's a riot. Like, he's just so damn locked into his job at all times, which should be obvious, but it's also something to, like, see it. And you know, Vegas was, it was interesting. It was fun. I would say I can't wait to go back, but really I can wait about 10 minutes. I'll be fine for some time until maybe I have to go back. So, you know, and maybe some things will dawn on me and as we talk more and more. But for right now, I think what we're really ready to do is kind of put Summer League in the past. You know, we saw Cooper Flagg. We saw Andrew Nembhard. If I have a hot take, it's that Nembhard was fine. He was fine. Undersized guy, really undersized, like 5'10". It's very hard to discern what a player can be when they're on these summer league teams that are just sort of devoid of team construction that makes sense. You know, like if you watched any the Charlotte Hornets, a team that beat the Mavericks in the third summer league game, like really beat the pants off of them, went on to win the summer league championship because they were like a well-constructed team. Like things worked with them. They had a first round pick. They had a second round pick. And like the Mavericks, once they got what they wanted to see out of Cooper, they shut him down. And I think that's perfectly defensible, but it also means the Mavericks, the Summer League Mavericks, essentially played three basketball games where reading into it.
Yeah. There's nothing there for the regular season roster. Really.
There was a cool post. Let me see if I can find it. That I found that somebody sent me yesterday on Twitter about which stats from Summer League are sticky, which I think is basically carry over into the regular season. Let me see here. I will post this. and I'll read about it a little bit real quick. I'll share it where we can kind of go live on the show, where you can see it in the stream, and then I'll read it for people who are listening to the audio version. But where is my share button? This is why maybe sometimes we need a, what do you call it? A producer. Anyway, Owen Phillips, his handle, if I can read his name, is Owen LH Phillips. He wrote a Substack post on the correlation between, like, you know, stats that basically work and translate from Summer League to the regular season. And the ones that I found pretty interesting, it's some of it, it makes some sense if you think about it. It's like 3-point rate attempt, 3-point attempt per 36, assist per 36, block per 36, total rebounds per 36. I'll share the link in the feed at some point and put it in the comment description if you want to read it. I thought it was like, there was just an interesting graph, and then the Substack post itself was pretty interesting. And essentially my friend Seth Partnow summarized it like this. He said, basically these things are that capture play style carry over, but the things that measure achievement, not so much. So, you know, Cooper Flagg, pretty good in those things. So we should be excited.
As if you weren't excited enough.
That's right. No, that's right. And I just kind of keep circling back to that. I was talking to some dads at my son's basketball practice tonight about him, and I'm just like, this guy is every high school coach's dream to be able to be like, here's what Cooper Flagg is doing, because he's just fundamentally sound and psychotic. So we're really going to have a good time with that.
Good.
Then the next thing we're going to talk about, you finally did a thing which you've been noodling on for probably 2 months. You wrote a three, like, it was my favorite. We just some behind the scenes stuff. At Mavs Moneyball, we kind of have some site rules where if you're going to write anything over 1,200 words, we need to know why, because most people stop reading in about 1,200 words. Josh wrote 3,000 words on why Davis at the four causes some challenges. If you haven't read the piece, it's up on the site. Really easy to find because we've not been writing a ton lately. The DLLS guys spent a Friday afternoon talking about it, which is how good it was. And it really was good. But I wanted to kind of give you the floor a little bit to talk about that piece as a whole, and also some things that you've sort of settled on now that it's been up and you've gotten some reactions. So I'll just cede the floor to you.
I think reaction-wise, I'm actually surprised that there wasn't more people yelling at me and telling me to fuck off. But maybe that was just my timeline that I curated pretty well. Maybe there were people telling me that and I just didn't see it. But I expect, because I mean, I wouldn't say it's an inherently negative piece. It's just me trying to look at it as rationally as I can. You know, how could this work? How could it not? So that was the first thing, is I just expected more people to get pissed off about it, because I think now that the off season has kind of slowed down, I think people are kind of drawing their lines in the sand and how they think what this team is going to be. And there's one side that thinks the team's going to stink, and there's another side that thinks the team's going to be good. And now we just war about it until they actually play real games, which is like, what, we still got another like three or 4 months before that happens. So, you know, war never changes. other than that, you know, I just wanted to sit down, because I need to do this for getting ready for the season anyway. Like, I need to look at this stuff, and especially because this isn't, you know, Luka Doncic, who I've been watching for 6 years or whatever. I watched Anthony Davis play 11 games with the Mavericks, and those are probably – that's the most I have watched him in a single season, maybe since he was in the Pelicans and I had more free time and I used to watch – like every game that I could get my hands on. But like, since then, you know, I pretty much watch almost exclusively Mavericks games and then whatever's on national TV. I don't go out of my way to watch League Pass stuff because I don't have the time. Like, we cover, we podcast, we write, we edit. Like, there's just, I cannot watch other games. It's I do my best to keep myself informed by reading other people that watch these
teams. Well, and Anthony Davis plays a style of basketball, has always played a style of basketball that isn't exactly, like, he's fantastic, but it's not appointment television. That's okay. Most players aren't appointment television.
Probably, yeah. I mean, maybe when he was with the Pelicans, but like, you know, since he got to LA, but I mean, LA was on all the time because of LeBron and himself. Right. I mean, that's a lot of star power, but I just needed to, look at the numbers and I needed to refresh myself on Anthony Davis so that I could kind of prepare myself because let's be honest, the 11 games he played with the Mavericks, and that's including the two playing games. Like they're just, I mean, not only is it 11 games, which is nothing, but then he was clearly hurt. So, like, there's so much of this where it's like you can just almost throw out a lot of what happened last season with the Mavericks. So now it's like, okay, well, now we got to go back. We got to look at what he did, you know, with the Lakers the last 5 years. You know, is anything that he did with New Orleans, you know, applicable to going forward? And it kind of feels like, I don't know, maybe, because it was just so long ago. And that's another part of it. It's just kind of he was on the Lakers for a long time now. It feels like he just got, you know, well, it doesn't feel like he just got drafted, but like he doesn't feel like an old player to me yet. Like it still kind of surprises me that he's going to be turning 33 years old, because in my brain I just don't see him as that age of player yet.
Yep.
So another thing was just like, I'll be honest. Like a big thing of this piece was I looked up his jump shooting stats, and I think that needed to get into a post. We, as far as Mavs Moneyball staff, media members, etc., that follow this stuff a little more closely, we have known he's been a bad jump shooter for most of his career. But I felt like the conversations I was seeing around him this summer, you know, is like, well, he just needs to be healthy and he'll hit his jumpers. And we just have to dispel that myth. And that's not to say that him at the four can't work because he's not a jump shooter, but we can't say that it'll work because he will hit jumpers, because there's just no historical precedent for him except for one stretch in 2020 where he hit some threes in the playoffs with the Lakers.
So I don't want to stop you, but you shared an interaction with a longtime follower of both of ours who we enjoy interacting with, who the guy essentially said, well, you know, he's pretty good for mid-range. He might not be a good three-point shooter, but he's a pretty good for mid-range. And you basically had to tell him to, like, read the post because he hadn't read the post yet. Can you spell out for us some of the numbers that you're talking about? Because I think people have this image. Like, I remember, like, Chuck Cooperstein and Jeff Skinwade talking about how it's like, oh, there's some Dirk-like qualities to his game. And I'm like, no.
It's not even close in terms of jump shooting. The only way I can see it is like that mid-post face-up game driving in from the short post, the nail. There's some stuff there. Maybe I could, like, you could, like, 2002 2006 through 2006 Dirk, like that driving. I could see some of that and like that mismatch stuff, but the jump shooting stuff, it's not even close. So yeah, I just took through from 2019. I didn't go his full season, but you know, here's his mid-range. And when we say mid-range, we're talking about outside of the paint, inside the three-point line. That's what the NBA classifies as mid-range when you're looking at the NBA database. So mid-range, 2025, 42.5%, which is probably the best number he's ever had. That's on 186 attempts. 2024, 30, we'll just call it 39% on over a little over 220 attempts. 2023, 40% on 197 attempts. 2022, 37% on 195 attempts. 2021, about 34.8 on 184%. 184
that's rough. Attempts. That's the year after they won the championship.
Yes, he shot under 35. All right. Wow. And the championship year. 2020, he shot 35% on mid-rangers. That's regular season. He shot 252 regular season mid-rangers. He made 88 of them. He shot 38% on threes in the playoffs. But again, we're just looking at regular season because we kind of have to look at regular season for right now.
Yes.
And then 2019, 35.5%. So he's been above 40 in the last 6 years twice. One of them was last season, admittedly, but also he did not play a lot of games last season. And it was his fewest mid-range attempts since 2021. So if he shoots 42.5% on mid-rangers this season, then yes, he will be, that will be somewhat of a sustainable and livable number. You usually want to be 41 and above.
It's kind That's of what I was going to ask.
Like, usually you want to be around four, like, especially if it's self, if you're self-creating.
Now, which is what he's going to have to do. Right. Like, he's just going to have to.
You know, catch and shoot. If he's shooting catch and shoot mid-rangers, no, he needs to be closer to like 50% for those to make. But if he's self-creating those mid-rangers, anything above 41, you can live with.
Okay.
League, best of the leagues is like 45, and then you'll see the elite being closer to 50%. On mid-rangers. Like DeMar DeRozan will shoot close to 50% on mid-rangers, and he shoots a ton of them.
And so guys, Josh was sort of describing there, and I want to try to put this, I'm spelling this out for me as much as for our fans. It sounds like to me how many games per year was he playing over that time? Can we be nice and say something like 55 to 60?
Yes, that would probably be the nice one.
Okay, so let's say 60.
Do you want me to tell you how many he's played?
I do want to know how many games he's played during that period, like an average.
Well, I'll just tell you that 2025 was 51 games, 2024 was 76, 2023 was 56, 2022 was 40, 2021 was 36, 2020 was 62, and 2019 was 56. So
how many 50. Seasons is that?
That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
So 55 games, roughly.
You nailed it. Look at you.
Well, it's just a guess. I know. So based on your volume, and I could be getting, so somebody's going to tell me to go fuck myself with the math here. But based off of what I was hearing you say, and Josh and I didn't rehearse any of this, so why would we do that? Why would we plan for a podcast? It sounds like to me he's basically taking in the neighborhood of 4 of these shots a game.
Anywhere between the last 6 seasons, lowest was 184 attempts, the most was 234. So what, you know, however that is
per game. 2 to 4 shots a game.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's part of his shot diet. It's so difficult, guys, because it's like we don't want to bag on him. It's just he has, and you can see this quite literally, go look at the Lakers box scores or Anthony Davis's. Like, I told Josh to do this. This was my fault. I sent him down this path right when we traded for him, where he has like 3 game heaters where he shoots like 65% from the floor. And then he has 7 game stretches where he shoots 40% from the floor. This is all shots everywhere. In the mid-range that we're talking about right now is kind of just the biggest symptom of the problem, because he's just not an efficient offensive player. He's just not.
When he's shooting jumpers, he can be when he's near the basket. He's really good in the paint. Like, he's a monster in the paint.
Mm-hmm. So as you watch him post up this year, these numbers are just going to live in your head, and you're going to start to see it before it even happens, where the self-creation aspect, it starts to be a real problem. My friend Darius, who is a Lakers journalist, I think he's actually a team employee now, told me that he works best with a downhill guard. Now, if D'Angelo Russell and him can work well together, we're going to see some nice nights.
Work together pretty well when they played together in Los Angeles, for what it's worth. The numbers were pretty good when both of those guys were on the floor.
So, I mean, there's some upside.
And then the three-pointers, forget it. He hasn't been – the last time he was above 30% from three was 2020. That's 5 years ago. Like, forget the threes. Threes isn't happening. And if it does, like, that's great, and you can tell me I'm wrong. But, like, I can't meaningfully look at last 5 years where he's been below 30% and just be like, oh yeah, he'll be 35, he'll be 36 this year. Like, why? Yeah. There's no logic for it. If it happens, that's great. And maybe it could, because jump shooting is fluky, and we've seen guys, you know,
that's true.
Turn it on. You know, like Jason Kidd couldn't shoot threes for his whole career, and then he comes to Dallas as a 30-plus-year-old, and he hit like 38, 39, 40% of his threes. So, like, you know, I'm not going to say it can't happen. I can't.
We just need to, we have to kind of start talking about likelihoods.
Right, exactly.
Is sort of what it comes down to.
So the jump shooting part of it sucks. But the thing that's going to make or break it, because he's going to be playing with a center for a majority of his minutes in the regular season. When you have Daniel Gafford and you sign him an extension, and for all we know, he's not being traded anytime soon, and then you have Derek Lively, like, I can't imagine. I don't know how many minutes Davis is going to play at the five. In 2020, he played about 40% of his regular minutes at the five, and then 60% at the four. I would imagine it would be kind of close to that. But the thing about the Lakers was his centers were JaVale McGee and Dwight Howard, like stopgap, not long-term contract, not long-term investments. It did not matter. Like, put those guys on the bench and they are not going to pout and piss and moan because like they were kind of journeyman role players. Derek Lively is a lottery pick. Daniel Gafford, from all accounts, believes he's a starting center, and he just got an extension that pays him like a starting center. Like, if you play Davis at the five a lot, that means Lively and Gafford are on the bench. How long can you keep both of those guys on the bench and not interrupt any locker room karma or, you know, whatever balance there? So that's something Jason Kidd's going to have to figure out. But if Davis is on the floor with Lively or Gafford, neither of them can shoot threes. So it's like, they're going to have to rely on oddball, not unconventional pick and roll combinations. Primarily, Davis is the ball handler in the pick,
which could be kind of fun
because he's a pretty good passer.
Yeah.
And he showed it last season. He averaged almost four and a half assists per game with Dallas. Like, that's a really good number. And he was really good with Gafford. They developed the pick and roll chemistry almost immediately. And I'm sorry to say, because I'm a big Lively fan, Gafford is a better offensive player right now than Derek Lively. Now, maybe Lively comes out this season, off-season training, and he's picking it up and he's better. But as of end of last season, Gafford is a better offensive player in terms of knowing when to finish, you know, knowing when to roll, the timing and the finishing ability. Like, Gafford is just kind of, he's just better. And Davis and Gafford had an awesome pick and roll chemistry when they were on the floor together in that short amount of time. The offense was actually awesome.
Yep.
Like, spacing be damned. They scored a shit ton of points per possession when Gafford and Lively were on the floor, because they would have Lively catch the ball at the free throw line and Gafford would have set a screen. And those guys are so big. Like, Davis is so big, he's able to pass over the top. And Gafford is so big, like, he's setting the screen and, like, he's turning and sealing and able to get a lob positioning so quick. Even with shitty spacing, teams weren't really able to guard it that well because those are just two huge dudes setting screens for each other. And then teams don't normally play double big, so one of the guys getting screened is a small. You're getting a big involved in the pick and roll that maybe doesn't want to play in space. So, like, they manipulated that pretty well. Qualifier. A lot of that damage was done against the worst team, like, really bad teams that weren't winning records. Like, you'll see when I pick the clips in the post, you'll see, you know, Nets, Hawks. Now, they did have that great game against the Rockets, but that was like 18 minutes for the most part. You'll see Bulls. You'll see Nets again. They played the Nets twice when Davis came back. So, admittedly, that's the other side of the coin, is they didn't play a lot of great teams when Davis came back from injury last season. So, we'll see. But the thing about it is they don't have to beat a ton of playoff teams to win 45 games and make the playoffs. Like, if they just take care of their business against crappy teams, they will not be a play-in team, which, no, again, that's not good. You know, the expectation is championship. You trade Luka Doncic, break up a 2024 finals team. Like, if they finish as a sixth seed and lose in the first round next season, that's a failure. And we can't pat them on the ass and be like,
Think they really, like, I don't know. This, as we know by now, the Mavericks have I want to be respectful here because it's not these people's fault, but the Mavericks, like, let's just call it their PR team, is new to this. So I talked about this in Vegas when I went on Kevin O'Connor's show, where I just said the Mavericks need to reset external expectations. Kyrie Irving is super hurt. That gives you a big fucking pass.
And plus Cooper.
Plus Cooper. So that's between those two things, you have an out. They need to take it.
I kind of think they are. Well, maybe not with the external expectations.
Externally.
But look at how the roster movement. Yeah. How can you not look at it and be like, they're taking the long road right now?
Well, because, I mean, Nico Harrison's an idiot. Well, like, that's how.
But they haven't traded any future firsts this offseason. They haven't traded any of their players for short-term boost. They've re-signed their guys.
Yeah.
Their only major free agent addition was a $5.7 million mid-level exception with no major commitment. They've kept all their picks that they have. Like, they have two first-rounders that they can trade, and they have three first-round pick swaps. They haven't traded them this summer. That that doesn't scream to me a team that's trying to push all the chips in to win.
Well, right now. I also think it's a math problem.
Like, they know, right? Because of Kyrie's, this is, with all the games getting, Kyrie's missing, right?
Well, but it's also just a cost of operating the team. Like, we're getting a little further past the things that I really wanted to discuss tonight, but we're here.
We might as well talk about it. Now we're not even talking
about it. No, it's okay. No, it's okay because, like, Mike Marshall went on the Dumb Zone and sort of talked about how it seemed like he can't prove this, of course. Former VP of content, Mike Marshall of the Dallas Mavericks, talked about how it really felt like they were not aware of the operating expenses it would take to run a team. Meaning the new ownership group,
and especially so because they came.
Jared Dudley flew south. Former Mavericks coach Jared Dudley flew southwest back to Dallas, home behind me. And okay, like the Mavericks all flew commercial. Like in the Mark Cuban era, none of these guys flew commercial. Like I just don't.
Yeah,
like,
Cuban bought a plane. Then they Cuban, would always
right. So it's just like we're operating on a different financial plane. Now, why does that matter to what we're talking about? I don't see any owner willingly paying this much money for a shitty team. Okay. Like you can get away with a lot. I think right now with the Adelsons, because the Mavericks are probably way down their list, but the repeater tax and being in the luxury zone starts to really kick the shit out of you. The Mavericks are a monstrously expensive team. They are a shade under the second apron. So I just want, and so I bring that up to say, yeah, they might not be expected to perform, but at a certain point, you got to shit or get off the pot. And so it's like, we're kind of
Nico's public comments has said we are trying to win a championship now. And you don't don't break up the 2024 finals team to make it to the second round and call that a success, right?
I think he starts to walk this stuff back. I think they have to.
Cooper gives them. Get out of jail for a card.
And even me, Mr. Hater, like capital H Hater, if they reset expectations, I'm going to have to say that's the smart call. That's all. Like it's Salam asks, are you hinting at the Adelsons cutting bait? No, I'm not. But at a certain point, if you're investing, you expect to see a return. And the Mavericks are, you know.
And what the Adelsons see as a return, I think, is different than what Cuban would have seen as a return.
That's right. Cuban was willing to lose money on the Mavericks year over year because at a certain point he knew he would make all his money back and then some, which he did. We have a comment from Twitter saying, with all their money, can't they afford to operate the Mavericks?
Yes, they could. But
yes, absolutely. That's not what I mean, but it's like,
they don't want to just throw money away. Yeah.
They've lost a lot of money in all sorts of different stuff over the years.
It's the if you guys have seen that Simpsons episode with Bill, where Bill Gates and Homer starts up a business, and Bill Gates comes to buy him out, and Homer's like, "All right, don't screw it up. We did it. We're rich." And Bill Gates goes, "All right, buy him out," and he has his thugs break all Homer's stuff, and he's like, "What are you doing?" And Bill Gates goes, "Well, I didn't get rich by writing a bunch of checks."
That's funny.
Like, billionaires did not become billionaires by giving handouts. So
you see that by things like, "Well, we're flying our generational first class pick home on American Airlines." Like, I just can't. I'm sorry. I just can't stress to you how bush league I find that. Like.
That's pretty crazy because we thought it's so funny because that's what we thought would be different with we were like, all right, well, at least they have money. Like we're now owned by one of the richest families on earth. And
keeping my mouth shut about it because I'm just like, there could be something I'm missing.
And yeah, I know.
Don't feel like getting yelled at by somebody important, but it's just
you've already said enough to get yelled at by someone important, just FYI.
Well, I don't want to do it today. It's July. Like, can I get yelled at in November? That's fine.
That's fine. Okay.
Anyway, we have a gentleman on Twitter saying, I thought he flew the Adelson's plane to Dallas. Do you mean back to Maine? No, I mean from Summer League back to Dallas.
He flew on the Adelson's plane for the welcoming press conference after he got drafted.
Yeah. But that's, you know, that's okay. Like what these teams, how they choose to spend their money is up to them. I'm just saying it's like, it's a stark difference is kind of my point.
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break, insert some ads, and then we will be right back to do maybe a short segment. I'm not really sure. This is something I threw to Josh at about 2 o'clock today, so who knows how prepared either of us are about anything. So
and we don't know each other's players that we pick.
That's right. We will, and I'm going to go first, and I really hope I didn't pick your player.
Oh, that'd be funny.
We will be right back. Thanks for hanging out. Okay, guys, Pod Maverick here. Thank you so much for sticking with us. If you've not subscribed, maybe you could do that. Be nice. YouTube, we're at about 3,600 followers. Would love to get to 4,000 by the end of the year, like 400 people. That's not too hard on YouTube. On our, you know, our subscriptions through podcasting. You know, if you haven't done so, please consider doing so. We record after every game. I'm going to try to do a lot more live shows this year because I won't have an infant. We're going to be in a better place. You know, the last. It's so funny. Every time Josh and I are up for a new contract with a podcast company, something very bad happens to the Mavericks.
Wait, what happened last time?
That was when the team just tanked.
Oh, the 2023 season?
Yeah, 2023.
Yeah.
Season. Oh, God. And all of a sudden, no one was listening to our show. And, you know, that's just sort of the way of things. Yeah, we would like more subscribers. We really appreciate it. Like, I just can't tell you how much I appreciate the people who are willing to stick around and talk with us. I met and hung out actually with Glenn, our regular contributor here to the post game shows. He and a friend took me to like a local Mexican food place out in Vegas that had, I had the best carnitas I have ever had. It's kind of, yeah, kind of wild,
you,
right?
You live in Texas.
That's exactly right. Yeah. All right. So we're going to try a segment here. And I think it'll probably be a recurring segment given how much, you know, off season content we have to fill. One of my favorite things about Twitter, kind of why I joined, was essentially just the sports arguments and discussions that come from the concept of let's remember some guys. And the Mavericks are a 40-plus-year-old organization. There are a lot of guys to choose from. Josh and I are both, I'm in my early 40s. Josh is in his mid-30s. So we have a lot of people from our time that we want to talk about. And I think what we're going to do each week is we're just going to grab a guy. We're going to talk about that guy a little bit back and forth. And I want to just sort of think back with some of the nostalgia based stuff, because there's been some fun players over the Mavericks. And it's like during the time that they're on the team, sometimes I just get so aggressive about the specifics of a person's game. And I don't appreciate how much fun it is to have that player. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I couldn't handle Ray Felton at all when Ray Felton was on the team, but he's a funny little dude who like basically helped win the Mavericks one of their only playoff games following the championship season. Like it was, yeah, he's not my choice though. my choice today was somebody who I saw at Summer League, and I think right now he's taking a really big beating for whatever his part was with the Luka Doncic trade. And that is Michael Finley. Michael Finley, I love Finley. I cannot, he's a 15-year player. He played with the Suns, the Mavericks, San Antonio Spurs, and then his final season with the Boston Celtics. Finley, if you guys are not old enough to have watched Finley, he was a man just who would not make sense in this modern NBA. We got Brandon down there in the chat, who's an older Mavs fan like us, who just remembers all these guys. And Finley came to the Mavericks as part of that Jason Kidd trade. He was traded in the middle of the 96-97 season, and that was the year... that is just fucking blows my mind. That was the year where he played 83 regular season.
Why'd they play 83 that year?
They didn't. He did.
Oh, because of the oh, okay. That's crazy. Yeah, he was he never got hurt.
Well, until he basically died on the vine. But yeah. Like, if you go look at this guy's stats, and so he joins the Mavericks in 1996-97. 97-98. All right. That's the first full year with the Mavericks. That 97-98 year was one of the years where the Mavericks beat the Bulls during the Bulls 72-10 season.
Yeah, they were one of the 10.
One of the 10. And like, I can't, like, this 97-98 Mavericks team, we could do a whole series. Like, they were awful. But Finley was a Chicago guy. He got it up. He was age 24 playing Michael Jordan. Just one of those really important things. Let me read you Michael Finley's minutes totals, okay? So 97, 98, 82 games, 41.4 minutes. 98, I know, right?
So minutes per game? Is that what you're saying?
40, yes, 41.4 minutes per game. 98, 99, a lockout shortened season. 50 games, so every possible game, 41 minutes per game. 99, 2000. So this is that's not Dirk's rookie year, is it?
Dirk's rookie year was 98, 99. Yeah. Was the lockout
season. Was the lockout year.
So remember, that's why it was just, his rookie year was just terrible.
He then, in 99, 2000, 82 games, 42.2 minutes per game. 2000,
going up.
2000, 2001, 42 minutes per game. I'm sorry, 2000, 2001, 82 games, 42 minutes a game. 2001, 2002, 69 games, 39.9 minutes per game. Wow. He's just a machine. I could keep reading you these totals. You have to go to his IMDb page. He is a monster of a basketball player who is out here scoring buckets pretty efficiently, getting to the line reasonably enough, doing a little bit of everything. And I think because he was part of the first amnesty clause where the Mavericks bought him out, and then he ended up in San Antonio. And did he win a ring with San Antonio during any of his buyout years? I can't tell here. But
Well, his first year with the Spurs was that crazy 2007 playoff series, that epic.
Yes, you're right, where the Mavericks won.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he played 05-06 in San Antonio too, but the Spurs didn't win then. He was just all over the place.
That was 2006. Was that? And so he won a ring in 2007 with the Spurs.
That's right. And he was responsible for a game which really for a pass really, and you can go find this whole fourth quarter on YouTube. The year the Mavericks finally defeated the Utah Jazz and Calvin Boot, like the Mavs go down. This is first round.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah.
First round of the playoffs. The Mavericks are playing the Utah Jazz, who had just sort of worn them like a hat for several years. Like
the John Stockton. This is the John Stockton, Karl Malone.
We're talking like I hated these guys. And the Mavericks could fall down 0-2 to the Jazz. And they storm back and win two straight. And then they play game five in Utah. And then Michael Finley, for what ended up being, it wasn't like the game winning shot, but I think it was like, maybe it does count as the game winning shot. But he has this hilarious, and I mean, you can see this. I cannot believe they didn't call this. Amazingly awful travel from the right wing. And then he dumps the ball in to Calvin Booth for like a little reverse layup. And the ball goes in. And I remember where I was standing in my kitchen, and I was with my mom and my dad was out of town. And it was like, oh, this is so fucking cool. That was just, it was like such a feeling of like pure exhilaration. And Michael Finley was just a key part of that.
Yeah, I mean, that was the first big, because remember, that was like their first, was that their first playoff series since like the 80s?
Mm-hmm.
That 2001 series against the Jazz, right?
That they, or
did
won?
They make did they make the playoffs in 2000? I can't remember.
I think they did make the playoffs. Let me see here. I got the IMDb page up. How did these Dallas Mavericks do that year? Nope, that's Michael Finley. The Dallas Mavericks in 1996, they finished 39.
I'm trying
out of their year. I know this. There's just so many, like, there's so many data sites where it's like you end up. They finished 40 and 42. So
no playoffs. So that 2001 playoff series win, that was their first playoff series win since 1988.
Mm-hmm. Where the, so that's what? Yeah,
13 years.
Yep. Yep, and it's pretty brutal. Like the 90s, the Mavericks and like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were two of the worst franchises.
Yeah, not just in professional sports. Yeah, I think Sports Illustrated had them on the cover. Their like worst franchise of the 90s was the Mavericks.
And Finley was just a key part of the rise, and you know, part of why he's with the team now is I think he really valued his time with Dallas, you know. It's the way Cuban used the amnesty clause in him. There's some ugly business stuff that happens in basketball. I just think it's kind of neat that he came back. He wants to obviously still work and learn. You know, I think he'll probably be a general manager someday, or at least, you know, a high level assistant for a really long time. He looked a little stressed out in Vegas and tired. Like, I think these back office guys work a lot harder than we realize.
He's a big part of their scouting too, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Our guy, David Trink, took a picture with him at the airport and he just looked like he was ready to go home. This is what I'll say.
As most people look like in the airport going home.
But from Vegas. I don't know. Like, the, there's just some numbers. Like, you just don't see this from guys anymore. Now, the pace of game today is different. Like, the sheer number of possessions is different. But this guy was a dog. And I just wanted to talk about him a little bit. And I've been thinking about him for a while. He was the guy. Let's remember some Michael Finley time. You know what I mean?
Had a lot of really awesome violent. Like, he wasn't an acrobatic dunker, but he had violent dunks.
Oh God, do you remember his dunk contest dunk?
His cartwheel
thing. Cartwheel dunk. If you've never seen it, you have to go see it it's the same time Vince Carter basically ends all humanity with his elbow through the rim dunk, and Finley's just there.
Yeah. I love Finley. This is really funny because you're like, what if we pick the same person? You hinted at that before the break. Because I think I went as far. You went with a relatively popular pick, and I did a deep cut.
But we're gonna do both. Like, there's enough guys where I think we have to.
I just feel kind of silly. Mine is he only played for the Mavericks for 1 year, and it was in 2002-2003. My pick is the Wizard Walt Williams. If you don't know who he is. And you shouldn't really know who he is if you're listening to this podcast. And if you do, you're as old as me or older. And I imagine anyone that's under the age of 33 probably doesn't know who he is. He was a former seventh overall pick by the Kings in 1993, played in Maryland, was an awesome college player, was a pretty good NBA player as well. He was an incredible shooter, like career 38% three-point shooter, and this is back in the most of his career was in the mid-90s, and he was shooting almost 5-6 threes a game in the mid-90s. That's a lot in the mid-90s, you know, in terms of where the game was back then, and he made a lot of threes, so he was a really good player. He was like a 6'9" forward that could play kind of the three or the four. He was
Nelly Ball personified. Yes, like, just kind of a Nelly perfect Nelly player.
Yes, exactly. Because he averaged about, you know, three to four assists in his heyday. He was a good, solid guy. Now, his last season of his career is with the Mavericks, 2002-2003. So he was definitely at the end of his rope. He played a decent amount in the regular season, but I will always remember him, and this is what the bulk of my talk about. His playoff game, it was one of the greatest playoff games I've ever seen in my life. Second round against the Sacramento Kings. And this is back when the Mavericks played the Kings a lot in the playoffs and in the regular season. They had a pretty, you know, everyone remembers those mid-2000 Dirk rivalry games against the Spurs and the Suns when Nash left. Those Kings games were right up there. Because all of those games, it felt like those games ended like with like
also hated that team.
Yes,
really hated. They were so good.
They were really good. And they were always high scoring games. Mm-hmm. Like, both of those teams could score the basketball. And this was at a time when, you know, scoring was not at a premium in the NBA. And then you see the Mavericks and the Kings, and they would have scores that were like 131-128, and that's a lot now. And that back in 2002, that was like astronomical. So I always remember game three against the Kings. It's a 1-1 series. Chris Webber, I think, he tore his ACL in game two. So it kind of felt like the Mavericks had that, you know, but you never know. So game three in Sacramento, series is tied 1-1. This is huge for the Mavericks. I think the Kings had eliminated them from the playoffs in the previous year. And Williams plays 16 minutes. It's a double overtime game. He plays most of his minutes in the first and second overtime, scores 10 points, 2 of 5 from three, hits massive buckets. It's a 141-137 Mavericks win in double overtime, and I'll never forget him making clutch threes in overtime. My family, we had just moved out of the house that I was born in. I was in eighth grade. or we had just moved during the playoffs. I think my dad just got DirecTV satellite. He didn't have it set up in any other room in the house, except we set it up in the living room because I was like, I have to watch this game. And they went to bed because it was a Sacramento game at Sacramento. So that was like the 9:30 tip off of that playoff night. So I'm in the living room. It's the only TV that has the satellite hooked up to it. There's no couch. We just moved in. We didn't have the couch set up. And I am pacing in the living room for the entire, what, that's 48 plus five more minutes. So whatever, 58 minutes of basketball. I am like that Sylvester Stallone gif of him smoking cigarettes and drinking coffee. Like, I'm pacing around my room as an eighth grader. I'm going nuts. I'm trying not to yell to wake up my parents because their bedroom was really close to the living room where I was watching the game. And that will just be seared in my memory. I'll always love this dude because he scored. It was the most points he scored in that series. He didn't play a lot. Like, he averaged like, you know, maybe 12 minutes a game in that playoff run.
Yep.
And it was just crazy because it was like, who is this guy? And like, I didn't know who he was. Right. I mean, I knew who he was that season, but like, it was just so cool. He just came off the bench and made a bunch of he made two, but it felt like a bunch. And
no, but
that was a crazy game. I'll always remember that game and always remember him.
Playoff games swing on shots.
Yeah.
And like, you just remember shots, and sometimes they feel big. That's a good one. That's a really, really good one. So good. I think you should maybe see if you could find that quarter
YouTube. It. Oh yeah, I'll find it. That game
That would be a fun thing to write about now that we're in like the depths of nothingness where it's just like there's just nothing to talk about. Yeah, I know. I was laughing because our homies at DLLS were like making chicken salad out of chicken shit trying to talk about stuff. There's just nothing. And like this was fun. This was the best 20 minutes we've done in weeks.
Here, I'm going to put it in the chat. Here's a the whole game I think is actually on.
Oh my god.
But I don't want to put that.
All of those games were so good.
This is
so good.
9 minute highlight reel of that game. So if you're a Mavs fan, you should watch that. It's pretty crazy.
It's kind of difficult because if you're younger, like we have a couple of younger fans that pop in here from time to time, and it's just so hard to explain. The post-Jordan era, basketball was really weird for about 5 to 6 years. And I don't mean like 1998. Yeah, I mean like 2003 on. You get these Pistons teams, which grind folks to a halt in the Eastern Conference. And then you get the Mavericks, Kings, Suns, and the teams in the West. Which is just like
they're playing two different sports.
And frankly, they have been for 20 years. Like the Western Conference has been the better conference the entire time. And it's just you see the genesis of some of this stuff where, you know, what we talk about now where the Celtics sort of break the math with how many threes they shoot. And we remember in like 2011, we're like, oh, look how excited we are for the Mavericks to shoot 20 threes. And it's just like, what the fuck? Right. What is happening? And I don't know. I think this is going to be a good segment. I do think we're actually going to have to coordinate now that I think about it a little bit more.
We don't pick the same guy.
But there are some, like, there's just so many guys. And if you've been a Mavs fan for a really long time, really, let's just say the Dirk era on, there's some real options. Brandon, Brandon, I'm going to give you some homework. I want you to consider some guys, Brandon. And we'll come on the Friday podcast and talk about those guys. Obviously, I want you to talk about whatever you want to talk about when you come on our show, Brandon. But you and our guy Doyle Rader, who has been on a long sabbatical, and really Brent as well, just remember guys. And that's important, and it's fun. Sports is supposed to be fun, and sometimes I fucking forget that.
Right.
So, well, this has been a good show. Better than we, I don't know. We always, I don't know. I like talking to you. You're good at this. Let me see here. I think that's it. No idea what we're writing or what we're doing at Mavs Moneyball. You should pop over and we'll talk about things. There's not going to be a LeBron James trade. So womp womp for Josh and I. Yeah, no. But okay. This has been a great time. Everybody, thank you so much, and be good, and I will attempt to podcast Friday. No promises, but I would like to, so we'll see what's going on. Everybody be good. Go Mavs.